Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. Today, I'm excited to have Sharon Feeler on the show. Sharon is the former Chief Administrative Officer for Peabody Energy, the former Federal Reserve Board Chair of the 8th District, and now the founder of ABC to CEO. Sharon, thank you so much for being with us today, all the way from Arizona.
Arizona, and I must say we had a little warmer weather out in Arizona than you have here right now, but it's nice to be back to St. Louis.
Yes, well, you spent many years here, didn't you?
Many years, yeah. So. Actually, I had my entire career in St. Louis. It was not until I retired, which I now call my post-career life,
I
left the Midwest and wanted to explore what it's like to live in a different place of this country. So we moved to Scottsdale, and in the summer months, we go to Lake Tahoe. So a nice life, but I get back to St. Louis quite often.
Right. Well, we miss you.
Oh,
I miss seeing you around at different events. So let's just jump right in. I want to talk a little bit about how you grew up. Can you tell us about your upbringing and,
Yeah. Not that it's that interesting, but I grew up in southern Illinois in a little community called Germantown, Illinois. Very small, population 1,000.
Oh, my.
Yeah, very small. So a number of the communities would come together to form a little high school, and I had 89 in my graduating class. It was a good place to grow up. High work ethics. It was primarily blue-collar community, mm-hmm. but very high work ethics. You drive the streets of the community, and everything is clean and perfect, and people cut their lawns, and everything looks nice.
And you knew everybody, I bet.
Of course.
Or your parents
did,
anyway.
Not only in Germantown, but also the surrounding towns. So,
right.
Yeah, it was good, but I knew at a pretty young age. I actually remember I was 12 years old, and I said, I want to do something to experience the world a little bit more. So going off to college, quite honestly, was pretty unusual for that. I'm talking the early to mid-70s. Even in my graduating class of 89, I think five of us went to college.
Is that right?
Yeah, so it was a small group. We had a lot of great activities in the community, but the one thing I will say that I missed quite a bit, didn't know it at the time, is this is before Section 9, or Title 9, I guess it's called,
mm-hmm.
Title 9.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were no activities, no planned activities for girls, sports activities. So even though the high school had baseball, football, basketball, and even some golf in a little cow pasture for the boys, there were no girl activities.
That's hard to even imagine.
Isn't it? Yeah.
It is.
And even our high school, we didn't even have a gymnasium in the whole high school. This is pretty rural country. That is the only thing about my growing up that I really wish could have been different. Everything
mm-hmm.
else, it was a pretty good
place.
It was a good
life. Place to grow up.
Yeah.
Salt of the earth people.
Yeah. Easy, safe.
So I have to ask you, and I don't even know if you've thought through this, but when you were 12, you had this vision of experiencing more.
Right.
But where did that come from? When you didn't really have that, did you have cousins or something
from other parts
of the country?
No, nothing. I don't know the exact number, but I've probably got about 65 first cousins. meaning from my mom or my dad's side, these were very big German Catholic families. I was the first one to go to college out of the group. Now, I was one of the older ones, too.
Right.
But no, nothing like that. It was just, you know, you see a newspaper, you see the news, and it's like there's more out there.
There's a bigger world out
there. There's a bigger world, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and my parents were not well-educated themselves, but they felt that, you know, if I wanted to do it, we're going to go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, that's good.
So they supported
you.
Oh, they supported me all the time, yeah. But it wasn't like they were encouraging. It was more supporting.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a difference. Mm-hmm.
There is.
Yeah. So.
Right.
So, yeah, it was nice.
So the trajectory, did you set the trajectory for the rest of your cousins? You were one of the older cousins. So you went, did you see other cousins follow in
your
footsteps?
Sure, because by then, you know, I graduated from college in the mid-70s. So it was like 77 when I graduated. And more of the girl cousins were going to college than some of the male cousins. I can't say I was a trendsetter or anything. I think it was just the times.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, there were many who've gone since I've been there.
So talk to me a little bit. When you entered college, I mean, did you know kind of what you wanted to do?
No.
Well, tell us a little bit about that path.
No, I didn't know at all. I actually went into social work. And so my undergraduate degree was actually called human relations, I believe, but it was a lot of social work kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And my practicum at the end of the program was to work in a setting. So I worked in a hospital setting as a social worker and then was hired to stay there because they had somebody out on leave for a while. So for 1 year after school, I was a social worker, along with being an admin assistant on the side because I needed more money than the social work could give me.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I did that for
so
a year.
So you worked two jobs?
Two jobs, but it wasn't, you know, maybe 50 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, like,
mm-hmm.
so overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
But I finished college in 3 years because I knew I really wanted to get out and make money.
Mm-hmm.
So making money was always something that was important.
It was a motivator for you.
Yeah, because there wasn't a whole lot. But it was,
right.
You know, it was fine. I never felt like I was lacking. But then after I worked for a social worker for a year and the person came back, I needed to really find a job. And I applied and was hired by Ford Motor Company, the assembly plant, into their what was then called personnel group.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hired into the Ford College Graduate Program, it was called. So because I'd only been out of school for a year, I still
mm-hmm.
qualified.
Mm-hmm.
Went there and got my first introduction to human resources. And did that for 2 years, got laid off. That's when...
Is that right?
Yeah,
I did not know that.
Many of the car manufacturers around 1980 were having a lot of competition for the first time from foreign cars.
Mm-hmm.
And so this plant went from two shifts to one, and if you weren't at least probably 20 years seniority, you were gone.
So where were you? Where were you physically located?
St. Louis.
St. Louis.
Oh, yeah. Everything was in St. Louis.
Right.
Yeah. My entire working career was either St. Louis or, you know, across the river into Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So after that...
So you got laid off.
So I got laid off.
I call that a life interruption.
It was. But what I decided to do was I realized by then I wanted more business experience. So I went back to school, night school for an MBA, and went to University of Missouri. Of course, within a year, I needed to get a job and ended up being hired by Peabody, which became Peabody Energy,
mm-hmm.
and was hired there and spent 33 years there after that.
How did you start? How did you start?
I was a college recruiter. So I started in college recruiting, which would have been in March. But by the time we actually got to college recruiting, Peabody was having layoffs. And so all of the plans I had for recruiting were kind of put away, on hold. And I didn't even know if I was going to have a job again. But the company was also doing some new things within their employee base. And it was called salary administration, which is now we really refer to as compensation. So they gave me the very first job. It didn't even exist. So I took the very first role as a manager in that group. And I so
How old were you, Sharon?
I would have been 24.
That's awfully young to be a manager, to be put as a manager in that group.
It was just a title. It was a one-person department.
Okay.
There was nobody else there.
You weren't managing anybody.
And I remember I was so naive. I remember I got this job, and I had this office, actually, and I had this desk with all these drawers, and I made this file, and I called it salary administration. And I put it in this drawer, and because I didn't know what I was doing. Mm-hmm. It's like, of course, 2 years later, not only is every drawer in the office filled with subtitles from that, but file cabinets along hallways, and it was just so naive to think that I made one file called salary administration, and I thought that was going to serve a purpose.
That is so funny. Yeah. Well, naivety is sometimes a really good
gift. Yeah, it was a real training ground.
I bet.
Yeah, very quick training, and I had great mentors. I worked for a man by the name of Jay Sin, and he was an amazing mentor for me. Introduced me to lots of ways of doing things, but one of the things he taught me is if you want to be in control, you got to take charge. And for that, one of the things we did was we had these groups that were different coal companies because we were coal mining. Mm-hmm. And we would have these organizations, and he would always tell me, make sure you chair everything you can because that's how you take control.
That is interesting.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I've talked to so many people, and, you know, it put another way. I've had so many people say, raise your hand.
Yeah,
be the one to raise your hand. And raise your hand for the stuff that no one else wants.
Well, that's a very good point, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So I did a lot of different HR things over the years, you know, took on benefits, took on employee relations, took on recruiting. At some point, my opportunities expanded.
But you learned the business.
I learned.
You learned as you went through.
Absolutely.
And, you know, when you retired, you were in the C-suite.
I was.
Sharon.
Yeah,
you were.
I was.
The
yeah.
CAO had several functions reporting up through you.
Yeah, I had about five or different distinct functions, about 250 people. But it was a great, great job. I loved what I did and only retired because it was time to do something different, not mm-hmm. because I was tired of it.
Right. And I want to get to that because you are doing some different things now, some new passions, right?
I am.
I want to talk about that. I met you years ago. We served on a board together.
Right.
And I just so admired you and just your grace and your poise and the confidence that you brought. But, you know, you don't always start there, do you, Sharon?
Well, those are very kind words. No, there's a lot of learning that goes on with everything. Very, mm-hmm. very few of us, I think, are born with all of the attributes it takes to become a leader.
Absolutely.
It takes some hard work. It does take some intuition sometimes. And then it takes role models for you to watch and observe.
So important.
Yeah.
And you alluded to that. You said that you had a lot of mentors and people that built into you.
I did. I had my very first boss at Peabody. He was a very good mentor. Another individual who became our CEO at a later point, his name was Earl Engelhart. He was clearly somebody I learned a lot from. And later in my career, my last boss was Greg Boyce and learned a lot from him. So I had a lot of role models over the years and mentors to some extent.
Right.
I don't think it was mentoring the way we think of it today.
It's not a formal process.
Right. At least with Earl and Greg, they were also what I would term supporters. So they understood, you know, what I was doing. And I mean, quite honestly, chief administrative officer, it is kind of the back office things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they understood you can't have a business without it. And so they were great supporters mm-hmm. of my teams, which also makes a difference.
Well, let me ask you this, because some of our listening audience could be young women out there or young men, and they're sitting there thinking, wow, I wish I had a mentor. I need a mentor. What would you say to them? How could they go about finding a mentor?
Well, I see mentors in different categories. You've got mentors for the business where you're currently working. If you're in a company large enough, you will find individuals who you can learn from about that company. The person may also be a mentor for the particular field you're in, which could be the same person or might be somebody different. So you kind of got a technical mentor, and then you've got a mentor that kind of shows you the way mm-hmm. if you're in a larger company. And you need to identify who those people are. They quite honestly need to be, for the mentor that's kind of showing you the way, they need to be a little bit of a mover and a shaker themselves, because your whole point is to make sure you get recognition mm-hmm. at the quote table when individuals are talked about for promotional opportunities, developmental opportunities, and you need somebody there who's going to know who you are and speak up for you. You have to start with doing a good job.
Absolutely. And it's little by little, right?
It's little
taking,
by little.
Taking the assignments that are given to you,
always.
Doing those with excellence.
Always. If you've got an organization that is well-versed in how to develop people, trust them. Because I remember, actually, it was Greg Boyce, my last CEO I worked for. He always tells the story. He was an engineer. And one time he was told he was going to be given a new opportunity in government relations. And he was like, what does this have to do with my future? I have no clue. Little did he realize many years later, being in the industry we were in, which was coal mining, it had a lot of government relation interaction.
He needed that experience.
And he needed it. And
right.
He said it was invaluable. But at mm-hmm. the time, he almost thought about saying, no, I don't think I want to do that. I'd rather stay in engineering. But he didn't mm-hmm. because he trusted the leadership that they weren't going to take him astray. You don't always understand what a role may do for you until years later. But once you get in it, you do have to kind of make sure you do the best job you can within that role.
That is great advice. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Sharon Feeler. Let's face it, the future is mobile. There's a good chance that you are listening to this show right now on your phone. Have you explored how you can move your business mobile too? Our mobile apps team at Technology Partners makes it their mission to move our clients into the hands of their employees and customers and change their business processes to meet the demands of their users. Let's work together and build a dynamic mobile app for your team. Go to tpi.co/mobile apps and get the conversation started about how we can help you get your new application off the ground. So Sharon, welcome back.
Thank you.
I want to talk to you a little bit because since I've known you, you have been a person that has just given back. You served on so many boards. I always thought I was busy until I was around you. And you
well,
served
you,
on.
You and I were pretty well matched there with a lot of boards. But,
right.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about that. Two things. One is, how important do you believe that it is for leaders to give back? Secondly, there may be some people in our listening audience, women and men, that say, well, I want to serve on a board. How would I go about doing that? So talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, giving back is crucial. Our country is one where we are a very generous country, and giving back comes to many of us just naturally because of where we live. Now, I did find St. Louis to be a particularly generous city, not only with giving, but also with people being interested in helping other organizations. We've got a huge United Way effort in this city, have for many, many decades. But for me personally, I found myself, you know, often thinking back, I came from pretty humble beginnings, never really needed those services. I was quite fortunate, but recognized that maybe sometimes, you know, a lot of people get on the edge of needing it. And having services there is critical to getting people mm-hmm. back on their feet. Mm-hmm. So because I was so fortunate not to have needed it, I also wanted to make sure that those who did need it, it was there for them. It was a natural for me and many others to want to make sure that the community has everything it needs to not only help people who need help, but also from the cultural standpoint, to make sure St. Louis is a city that we can feel, we can have outings, be it at our zoo, at the botanical gardens, our wonderful museums we have, and be able to enjoy the life that St. Louis provides for us.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those things were a reason. I joined boards early, not only to participate, but also you find a lot of interesting people when you go onto boards. So working in a larger corporate environment, mm-hmm. maybe not large, but larger with several hundred people, you get a little bit insulated sometimes with people that you work with.
Mm-hmm.
And being on a board gives you an opportunity to meet a lot of interesting people.
A lot of diversity.
Tremendous diversity.
In different industries.
Different industries, different
backgrounds,
different ages.
Mm-hmm.
You see people who've been through their full careers already and the wisdom they bring to these meetings. You bring people in who are excited and young and it's their first time and they bring the energy into it. So it was an opportunity not only to help, to promote St. Louis, but also to meet people. Mm-hmm. And it became networking. And something that became interesting, I mean, you and I are examples. We served on several different boards together. Right. So you kind of start to know people outside of your industry, outside of your business, and it becomes networking. Mm-hmm. And you're amazed at how many times those interactions become important in your life in ways you never think.
Absolutely.
I mean, here you and I are today, many years later,
Still friends. And doing things together.
And enjoying kind of hearing what we're all doing and how we can still help each other.
Mm-hmm.
So being on boards, I highly recommend it for anybody. And these are non-for-profit boards. This is giving of your time. But quite honestly, almost every board you go on, there's going to be some expectation to help support it financially. Mm-hmm. And you can't be in denial of that. It is a two-piece kind of
equation. It's your time. I say it's your time, your talents, and
your money.
That's
right. But that's okay. These boards can't function without that.
Mm-hmm.
But some people are in a more of a position to give more time and don't have the means yet.
Mm-hmm.
But most of us, as we go through our careers, we have, you know, hopefully our financial position changes and we can participate either in one organization more than maybe we did at the beginning or in multiple organizations that we weren't able to.
Mm-hmm.
I have no regrets about any board I ever was on. Every one of them gave back to me in some way.
Absolutely. And I'm just thinking there may be leaders out there, and what you just said, I mean, encourage your people to get involved and to, because it's a way to learn, for one thing, because you are learning from diverse people. So Todd, just now you're retired, but you're not really retired.
You're post-career. that R word is not one that many of us want to associate with because
you are doing other things now.
We're doing other things.
You have a new passion.
I do.
So talk to us a little bit about that. What's your new passion?
I'm developing, along with my consulting partner, Beth Chesterton, an educational website for girls, let's just say 10 to 18 years old, although I think there's a lot of information on the website that even women early in their career would find useful. So ABC to CEO is the name of it. I came to this idea after I quit working at Peabody. I kind of sat back and said, okay, am I finished working? Is there something else I really want to do yet? And I started thinking about, you know, one of the things that I never, ever considered was really leading a company. I led teams. I had a very nice role within Peabody. I loved my job. But as I look back, I kind of wished when I was much, much earlier in my career that I had thought about, you know, maybe someday I want to actually lead a company,
mm-hmm.
a company either that I could have created myself like you have, or a company that exists already and work yourself to a point that you're seen as the next CEO. So I realized when I looked at my career, I had, in retrospect, let's just say, I really didn't shape it in a way that made me a candidate to become a CEO. When you look at all of the things that are important to becoming it, I made some wrong turns. Didn't mean I couldn't get to the C-suite, but I never was going to get to CEO. And so this organization is about insights that I want to give young women. It's applicable to anybody, mm-hmm. but I am directing mm-hmm. it towards young women because as we look at least Fortune 500 right now, only 5% of those companies are led by women.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd love to see that statistic change a little. I don't know where it can take us, but any improvement is a good improvement. So the website is all about teaching young girls about traits of CEOs and teaching a little bit older teenage girls about here's where you don't want to go wrong, be it staff position versus line position, mm-hmm. understanding P&L, understanding the importance of taking on new assignments, relocation, everything that goes along with that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's supposed to be an education about here's where you can run into a dead end, and if you want to keep the path open, be aware.
Mm-hmm.
So we call it preparing for the possibility.
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, and it's just, yes, and it's the possibility. It's possible. You have a vision that you could do this, right?
That's right. And we're not saying this is a track that we necessarily want you to take. We're just saying if you get to that point, we'd like you to be aware of these things mm-hmm. so you don't run into the dead ends.
Very good. And I'm just going to have to say, I mean, I never aspired to be a CEO, and I really could not do it without an amazing team.
Right. I mean, so, it does come down to that.
Oh, my
absolutely.
Goodness. I've got an amazing partner in life and business in yeah. Greg. Mm-hmm. And so many years ago, we launched into the entrepreneurial wagon, and it's been a fun ride. But you never can do it alone.
You
That's
can't
for
do
sure.
it alone. That's
you
right.
have to have a great
and we've
team.
Got a lot of materials that we try to educate young women about how important the team, the collaboration, and all of that is mm-hmm. in order to make it successfully.
Right, for sure. So let's talk about this real quickly before we sign off. This is something extra. So Sharon, I'd love for you to give us your insights. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
Well, I it didn't really take me long to think this one through. So having been on the side of hiring many executives, even being involved in hiring CEOs, talent management, organizational development, I really throughout my career have had a lot of opportunities to be exposed to leaders, different kinds of leaders, some, of course, better leaders than others. And one of the things that I can say pretty consistently, you can learn traits. So you can be taught, okay, here's how to be a good communicator. To some people, it's more natural than others, but here's how to be a good communicator. Here's how you become good at financial issues. Mm-hmm. All of these different traits that you would find in a successful CEO. But to me, what makes the difference is something that's not learned, but it's earned, and that's trust.
Oh. I love that.
I have found time and time again when I talk to individuals, as I did many times in my career, about I want to be a good leader and, you know, what do I need to do? I say to them, leaders actually have people following them. So always look behind you and try to understand, are people following you because they have to get their paycheck? Or are they following you because they trust you're going to take them to a good place? And the long-term leaders that I've seen time and time again that have stand the test of time, not only do they have the traits as a foundation, but they have learned how to have people trust them because mm-hmm. they're true to their
word. They're trustworthy.
So that's my something extra. It's trust.
I think that's...
And you can't learn it. You just earn it.
You earn it. That is wonderful. I love that. So Sharon, if people want to connect to ABC to CEO, how would they do that?
Well, we're not quite online yet, but we're getting close. You will find us at abctoceo.com. Shortly. We're not quite there, but we will be there in the next few months. So join us when we get there.
Yes, for sure. Well, thank you so much, Sharon. This has been just a delight. I just love seeing you
well,
when you're
you.
Back in St. Louis.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to see you.
It's been a pleasure
and
to
I've
have
enjoyed
you.
This. Thank you. I'm flattered that you asked me.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Our show today is executive produced by Brian Muncy. Our technical producer is Daniel Williams. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2018. For show notes or to reach out to Lisa, visit lisagailnichols.com/somethingextra. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen.